Kenny Luck has been a musician, and he is a writer here in northeastern Pennsylvania.
As a musician, you have certain influences that you like, and as a writer, you have influences too. And for me, early on, Thoreau was one of those influences. So I liked him so much that I ended up putting together this quote book, and it kind of took off from there.
The book is titled Thumbing Through Thoreau, and it includes some of Henry David Thoreau's best-known thoughts and writings. From Walden, for example, the mass of men lead lives of quiet desperation. Kenny Luck is now a filmmaker as well, and he may not have realized when he was putting together his book that some of Thoreau's thoughts might have reverberations for his recent film centering on the opioid epidemic. Not just Thoreau's notion of desperation, but Thoreau's image of a single footstep, for example. As a single footstep will not make a path on the earth, so a single thought will not make a pathway in the mind. To make a deep physical path, we walk again and again. To make a deep mental path, we must think over and over the kind of thoughts we wish to dominate our lives. And even, sadly, this perhaps from Thoreau's journals. On the death of a friend, we should consider that the fates, through confidence, have devolved on us the task of double living, that we have henceforth to fulfill the promise of our friend's life also in our own to the world. Kenny Luck is currently completing a PhD in human development at Marywood University in Scranton, and his documentary, Opioid Nation, The Making of an Epidemic, will be screened this Sunday as part of the Northeast Pennsylvania Film Festival at Wyoming Seminary in Kingston. Kenny Luck paid a visit to the WVIA studios to talk with us about leaving Thoreau behind for his current projects.
From there, I moved on to my second and third book, and they were more discussing regional issues, but now I'm trying to do that in some way with film.
Now, how did you get into film?
It's interesting because when I was doing the book stuff, which started in 2010 and will continue, but when I started, I knew even back then the power of social media, the power of YouTube and things like that. And it was something I always wanted to get into because I thought you could reach such a wide audience using those kind of communication tools. The difficulty is that film has a high barrier of entry, so you have to buy a lot of equipment, you got to learn how to use the equipment, and that took some time. So not long after the second book came out, I actually took a job in a public relations department, and they kind of had a tighter budget. So they hired me more as a writer, but when I expressed interest in doing photography and film, they were like, hey, use the equipment, go out. And I actually just kind of learned on the job, which was nice. So that was a good thing. And from there, I just kind of took it in my own direction. And that's how I kind of learned. It's been fun.
How did you settle on the focus of this film?
It actually goes back to February of 2016. So about a year and a half, almost 2 years ago. At that time, I made my first short film, and it was 15 minutes, and it was about the region's unhappiness. If you may recall, there was a study done a couple years ago that said the Scranton-Wilkes-Barre area was, per 100,000 residents, one of the unhappiest regions in the country. So I did a little film called Half Empty, Life in America's Unhappiest City, and I kind of wanted to go around and talk to people and see what they thought about that. And it turned out, to my absolute surprise, it ended up getting around 23,000 views in 2 weeks. So it was crazy. And I mean, not that that is going to break the internet, but it still was a lot for having zero budget. So with that kind of success, I thought, geez, I would really like to do something else and follow it up. So it took some time to figure it out. I'm in graduate school. I also work. There's a million things going on. So unfortunately, this took a little longer than I wanted. But I was talking to a friend and we were knocking ideas around the holidays last year. And he actually was the one that suggested it to me. He's from Tunkhannock. And he said, you know, have you heard about this opioid thing? And I started looking into it. And I always like to try to pick topics that what I call, you know, nationalize the local and localize the national. And I feel like this is one of those things that it's happening in other areas of the country, but Pennsylvania is particularly hit hard by it. And that's what sparked my interest. And once I started to read the literature, read media reports about it, I just thought this is something that needs to be looked into.
What was your plan then? What did you want ultimately this piece to be?
Yeah, there were a couple goals with it. The first was that I wanted it to be longer than the other documentary. So the other one was 15 minutes. This was 33. Now, that doesn't sound like a long time, but I had two or three friends helping me on different shoots and doing some B-roll and stuff. But most of it was me going out, interviewing people, and then totally doing the editing myself. So it's a lot of work, but I wanted to make it different in that sense. As far as the content goes, you know, we started out, we interviewed one girl who was a former user, so we kind of heard her story. Then about a month went by, this was in April of this year, I got in contact with a police chief in one of the cities here, so he was interested in talking about it, and it still didn't pick up any momentum, and it kind of hit some dead ends with people who were willing to talk about, but then it just totally took off. And I started reaching the district attorney in Luzerne County, people that were involved in policy, Democrats, Republicans, psychologists talking about it. The big person that it kind of revolves around was a mother who lost her son to an addiction who overdosed, and we kind of followed her around, and she's from a little town up in Wyoming County, and we kind of showed a day in a life, if you will, of what it was like with her. So the film kind of revolves around her, but then has these other people kind of intertwined discussing the issue.
We seem to hear that it affects all levels of society. It's no respecter of boundaries.
Yeah, that's what it seems to be. And what I found to be interesting is a lot of the, I guess, so-called action that's taking place is in these little small towns. Like the mother that we interviewed, she's from Forkston, Pennsylvania, and that's like a little dot on the map somewhere up in Wyoming County. But that's the same throughout Pennsylvania, Ohio, West Virginia, New Hampshire, all the states that are being hit by this. And you do see people being hit that are from different socioeconomic backgrounds, different ethnic backgrounds. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that opioids are so readily available, and they started out more with prescription opioids, and then people kind of move into the illicit market, and there's just a wide range that, you know, the last heroin epidemic was in the 1970s, and it kind of tapered off for a long time, and this new epidemic is bigger, stronger, and it's killing more people, unfortunately. Just in Pennsylvania itself, 13 Pennsylvanians a day overdose in Pennsylvania. It's that high. And when I was doing the film, I was reading research from last year, and at that point it was 10 per day. So it's going up, and you know, on its face, that's not like saying thousands, but you add that up. So every day, 13 people are passing away. That ends up being a lot. And actually, people dying from this in 2008, it surpassed the deaths of car accidents. So in other words, there's more people dying of opioid overdose than there are for motor vehicle accidents in the country as a whole. So that's a huge number. So I think that would put it more in perspective.
Stylistically, in putting the piece together, did you choose to use narration? Did you choose to let the individuals you spoke with tell the story?
Yeah. And that's a great question, actually. And, you know, as you know, being in the arts, there's a lot of different documentary forms. And if I may say, you know, the film was good, but there's still always more you could learn and do. And I can't wait to move on and do something else. But yeah, we had the subject speak, and we also had somebody do narration. The last film I narrated, this one was a friend of mine who's actually local in the arts, and he has a great actual radio voice, believe it or not, even though he's a painter. And I tried to make it as diverse in that way as possible, having voiceover, having subject speak, having action on tape, what they call NAT sound breaks, you know, having those things so the viewer isn't bored and it's not talking heads all the time. So it's good to kind of break it up.
What about the community response, the response of the various communities? What about on the state level and community level?
Yeah, there's been a couple things. I mean, the reaction to the film itself has been really overwhelming. It's right now, it's been out a little over a month, and it's surpassed 26,000 views. So people are finding it. And, you know, I have people writing to me, and especially the media attention. I mean, as far as anything I've ever done, this has been definitely the most successful as far as people paying attention. And it's continuing. It's being shown at a film festival, and I've been asked to give some talks. I'm going to be speaking at Lackawanna College this month as well. So it's been humbling to see people take interest in it. And I hope that it kind of starts and continues the conversation more.
And when you step back, what kinds of insights did you get as a filmmaker that you're going to take to your next project, independent of the subject?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, a lot of the things it's interesting because we're on radio, but I always feel like I could get better at doing sound. Sound is really tough when you're out in the field, as I'm sure you know. And, you know, you talk with one person, the mic is somewhere different, or you're interviewing two people, use a different mic. So sound gets real tricky, and it's hard when you're filming, especially if you're by yourself. I might have a 2 or 3 camera setup, then I'm worrying about lighting, then I'm worrying about sound, and I'm asking questions. So it's really hard to do all that and be a one-man show. But I've learned that the way technology is diffused throughout our culture, you can do that these days. Whereas I think in the past, it would have been impossible to do that with one person. So I do like the role of being like a guerrilla filmmaker and just going out with my tripods and lighting and just nailing it. And it does create this sense of independence that you can do that. So I think sound is always a challenge, and that's something, but I am happy that I feel that as far as the form of this, apart from the content, as you mentioned, is definitely stronger than my other work. And I think the shots are better. We use some drone footage on some shots. In some interviews, I use just natural lighting that was available, ambient lighting. And then other interviews, we use complete studio lighting, depending on what the situation was. So when you're filming, you're always thrown into like a different situation that you got to just react to. And sometimes you screw up, you know, and you just have to make the best of it. And then other times you get it right. And you're like, wow, that looks great. And it sounds great.
How about the film festival? Tell us where you're going to be and how we can see it.
It's October 20th through the 22nd. And my film is going to be on that Sunday in Kingston. And I'm thrilled about it because I never thought I would be able to get something in an actual film festival. I mean, I think that makes you a card-carrying filmmaker. I think it's one thing to put a video on YouTube and that's great, but then when you start doing the circuit like that, then it makes it all the more legitimate.
And I think that's wonderful about the length of it, as you describe it, Kenny, because it can be screened and be part of a program and then stimulate that conversation that you want it to do.
And that's great. Yeah. And that's what I was hoping for, because you don't want to go too long, but if you don't want to go too short, and I think it's kind of a nice, you know, it almost fits into the length of being like a TV documentary or something like that. So I think the length is a great asset to it.
As you say, you have to make choices given all the limitations that any filmmaker has. But to follow one person, that gives it some depth and some sense that we could identify on a more emotional level, don't you think?
Absolutely. And, you know, I learned a lot of that from my previous work in interviewing people and books. And, you know, the one book I did back in 2010, I think I interviewed like 30 people for that. So I kind of learned, but also being a graduate student, I've also learned and take courses on qualitative research method. So it's interesting to kind of bring in textbook stuff in the real world and have application and really just painting a picture for somebody. And that is something you always want to do, especially in film, is have some kind of emotional reaction. And I get so caught up in the theory or the content sometimes, or the form, or the camera setups, that I forget about that. And I think it's great if that's coming across that way.
And how did you decide to title the film?
Yeah, so the film is titled The Opioid Nation, The Making of an Epidemic. And, you know, it's funny because when we started filming, I didn't have a title. And I always like to have a subtitle and a main title and sort of something that would paint a broader picture. So by calling it Opioid Nation, it shows it's not just in Pennsylvania, but I wanted to have the making of an epidemic to show this problem is well underway, but it's not over yet. So it's not so much an origin story, but it shows through the emotional depth that you just mentioned how this problem got started and possibly where it's going.
And did you come away from it overwhelmed and discouraged, or is there light for us?
You know, I'm a positive person, and I always like to think that the glass is half full instead of half empty. But this was tough to do with that, because it seems like from some of the public officials I spoke with, there's legislation in the Pennsylvania General Assembly right now that's going through the motions, but not a lot has been done yet. And, you know, it's hard to say where this is going to go. I think like any epidemic, whether it's a pathogen or in this case, it's a behavior like injecting or taking opioids, you know, there's sort of a natural wave, but where that wave is going to crest, I don't think anyone knows yet. And it's serious enough that the state and federal governments are paying attention to it, but I think the worst, unfortunately, is yet to come before it stops. And I hope this film could kind of educate and entertain at the same time.
Have you been a watcher, a viewer of documentary films? Are there documentary filmmakers at a national or international level whom you respect?
Yeah. You know, I remember in 2004, I was an undergraduate student and I was 20 years old. And the first documentary I ever saw in the theater actually was Michael Moore's Fahrenheit 9/11. Now, he's a controversial guy, but I remember sitting there in the theater thinking to myself, I want to do this someday. Because back then, I mean, there were definitely documentaries, but there's a lot of people doing it these days. And that I always filed that experience in the back of my head, what that film did politically, whether you like him or not, that's fine. But he still had an impact with that film. I think to this day, it still might be the most successful documentary of all time commercially. But even him, there's other people too. And I try to be a student and watch different films, different documentaries of all types, because I'm generally a nonfiction person. You know, even in my writing, it's been nonfiction. The filmmaking's nonfiction. So I try to watch the best of the best and take something from that and think, huh, maybe that's something I can do.
Kenny Luck, filmmaker, speaking with us about his documentary, Opioid Nation, The Making of an Epidemic, that will be screened as part of the Northeast Pennsylvania Film Festival this weekend. We'll actually have two chances to see the film. Saturday afternoon at 2:30, there is a shorts block at the Iron Horse Movie Bistro in downtown Scranton, and Opioid Nation will be part of that block, and that's all part of the Northeast Pennsylvania Film Festival. And then again, Sunday, the 22nd of October at 3 o'clock, it will be screened again, Opioid Nation again, and that's part of the Northeast Pennsylvania Film Festival this weekend, Friday, this evening, Saturday, and Sunday. For more information on the web, nepafilmfestival.com, nepafilmfestival.com. Sunday screenings will be held at Wyoming Seminary in Kingston, just across the river from Wilkes-Barre, in the Kirby Center for Creative Arts. So Saturday at the Iron Horse Movie Bistro in Scranton, getting underway at 2:30, the shorts block, and then at 3 o'clock on Sunday afternoon at the Kirby Center for Creative Arts at Wyoming Seminary in Kingston, across the river from Wilkes-Barre. That's part of the Northeast Pennsylvania Film Festival, nepafilmfestival.com.